So lately I've been teaching on the paramis, and I want to talk about that tonight a little bit. So the paramis, as many of you likely know, is a list that the Buddha gave us on the perfections of the heart, and meaning the various ways that the heart matures, the various flavors of the heart, that aspects that we can cultivate in order to live from a very mature place in the heart. And these paramis in the insight tradition, there are 10, and in the Mahayana, there are 6, but they're all basically the same. Generosity, morality, renunciation, wisdom, patience, truthfulness, energy, determination, loving kindness, equanimity. Did I leave one out? I might have. You probably know if I did. But as I just said that, I'm going to say them again and listen to them and notice if there is one or maybe two that you get that sense of, oh yeah, that really resonates with me. I get how that works. Or maybe there's a parami that has felt distant, that just, you know, doesn't really strike anything up. So just listen to this. Generosity, morality, renunciation, wisdom, energy, determination, patience, truthfulness, loving kindness, equanimity. So I'm wondering if anybody would like to say, what did anything light you up? Yeah, Deborah, please.
I'm not sure why, but renunciation came up for me.
Uh-huh.
I think because in the early years that had such a negative connotation.
Yeah, sure.
But as I studied more and realized that it meant really letting go of what's unwholesome, making space to cultivate what is wholesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And finding that I need to do that all the time.
Well, and it feels good, right? I think that there's some resonance with that. And what a nice place to come from. Oh, it used to be that that was kind of eh. And now I really, really appreciate that. So just noticing that. Thanks, Deborah. Mary.
So one of the things I do is I have a practice that it was from Philip. And it's this whole arriving sequence. And then one of the things we do is we align with what we want to be about. And I usually say my what is wise view and wholesome intention. Mm-hmm. And as I practiced, I realized I needed a how.
Isn't that
and for my how? My how was the two paramis, was with patience and kind of resolve or determination.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that I could be patient with myself when my mind wandered or I was not. You know, it's like I wanted to do the shoulds, you know, no, honey.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, but that being said, I still wanted to be, have that sense of coming back with a kind of a gentleness with patience. And I find that reminder for me, and kind of you kind of hinted and guided that in your meditation as well. And I think that that's really important. It's like, we need to remember to sweep the path, but we don't have to take a shovel to.
Exactly. Right. It can be a whisk broom. It can be, it can really be gentle.
Yeah. So yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. And you know, I appreciate so much what you just made a distinction on. This is critically important. We can set intention. We can hear Dharma teachings, adages that might become cliche. They get be cliche usually because they're true. But it's so important to pause and say, how? How am I going to do this? And that's the brilliance of this practice, is that we all know that we're never just coming to Sangha one night or doing a series course and then we're all done. You know, okay, got that. It doesn't work like that. And so to continually ask how is so rich. It's so rich and it's courageous and it's also exciting. How am I going to do this? With patience, with some resolve, because I want it badly enough. because I'm going to keep going in that direction. And I don't have to take a shovel to my heart. Please don't take a shovel to your heart, right? Thank you for that, Mary. Anybody else? Did one of the paramis make your heart sparkle a little bit? Or was there one that you thought, that one, I don't want to deal with that one? Karina, yes, please.
I think it might be patience for me. It's, I'm not sure which one, but I just got back from a trip for 10 days and I feel like I just go in and out of my practice. And it's mm-hmm. like when I'm distracted with a lot of family, with just get really busy at work, it's like I lose sight of it. And I think I need a certain amount of patience and down, you know, I need the downtime. I need the willingness. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So something along those lines.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. And I think you're in good company that external busyness can make it feel like our practice goes off to the side. But it depends on how you define practice. Formal meditation practice, that can be really hard when one is traveling. But the awareness of what is happening is always here. And you know it. And you can get busy at work. You can get busy traveling. All of us, that happens. It's so normal. But the wisdom to come back means your practice is working. Mm. So you can trust that. The wisdom to come back. And of all these paramis, if you think about it, we actually can't do wisdom. We can cultivate, we can practice these other things, loving kindness, truthfulness, patience. But wisdom is a thing that is growing in us. And as we train more and more, it's almost like an air hole opens up and this wisdom comes up. Here it is. It's already here. So you can trust that, Karina, I think, that you came back and that's the wisdom. And it's all right. We all get busy. And patience, yes. Well, we can talk about patience maybe next month. Okay. So I love the paramis. I could just keep going through them over and over and over again. You know, like painting the Golden Gate Bridge. You just do it. As soon as you finish it, you start it over again, or start in the middle and go to the other ends, or pick any one and start there, because they're always beautiful, I think. So a little bit on wisdom. You know, I think that wisdom is this felt sense, this felt knowing, inner knowing of yes, no, not sure, the capacity to discern, that inner clarity, that listening in, that willingness to listen in, the wisdom that grows when we really understand the Four Noble Truths and see how they function in our lives. And I think probably everybody here is familiar with the Four Noble Truths, that difficulty happens, we tend to make it worse, we don't have to. And the path leading to the end of suffering is the here's how. You've heard that before. The truth that greed and ill will and confusion lead to suffering, but their opposites lead to freedom, the settling, the opening. And the truth of dukkha, the truth of change, the truth of everything we do matters. I've been thinking of this line lately that's, no small potatoes. There are no small potatoes. I love tiny little potatoes. But what I mean is that everything that we do matters. And I think that we can think, oh, it's just a little thing. It just is a little thing. But they add up, don't they? You know, you think about the contrail, the residual that we all leave, that others leave with us. It really matters what we do, and that's a wisdom that arises when we get that. Because what it does, I think, is it informs what we do or don't do that ability to say, my mind is in a clench. I think I'm not going to say that snarky thing. You know, that ability to hold off, that ability to pause and to wait. And you know, this beautiful teaching from Nisargadatta, when he said, wisdom tells me I am nothing, and love tells me I am everything. And in between the two, my life flows. It's so beautiful. Because with wisdom, we understand the Four Noble Truths. We understand karma and interconnection and how this all works. And it's not that we're nothing, but we understand that we're part of something really, really big. But love tells me I am everything. Because when we get it, this is how I'm thinking about this. When we understand how a part of everything we are and what we do really matters and the impermanence of everything, the truth of loss, the truth of everything is changing, what else is there to do except love? Really, what else is there to do except train ourselves in kindness and in care and understanding just how precious our lives are, each other's lives are? Louise Erdrich, the brilliant writer, she says, you have to love. You have to feel. It's the reason you are here on earth. You are here to risk your heart. You are here to be swallowed up. And when it happens that you are broken or betrayed or left or hurt or death brushes near, let yourself sit by an apple tree and listen to the apples falling all around you in heaps, wasting their sweetness. Tell yourself you tasted as many as you could. Isn't that beautiful? You have to love. You have to feel. It's the reason you are here on earth. Let yourself sit by an apple tree and listen to the apples falling all around you in heaps, wasting their sweetness. Tell yourself you tasted as many as you could. Isn't that beautiful? And of course, when those old rotten apples fall off the tree onto the earth, they're not wasting their sweetness. They're composting themselves back into the earth, making the earth that much sweeter. So this thing about wisdom tells me I am nothing. In some traditions, it's all an illusion, it's all a dream, but I'm actually here. You know, the old joke that says, if there is no self, whose arthritis is this anyway? Right? I mean, we know we have this body, and it's a feeling, thinking body, an experiencing of life body. But love tells me I'm everything. This thing about an in-between my life flows, what I want to talk more about is the flow. Because what is happening in between this? The flow is the critical piece, I think. How do we live in the flow of continual change? That's wisdom. Wisdom tells us how to do this. And that leads me to this other parami I'd like to talk about tonight, which is energy and effort. Now, I could have said any of the other paramis. Wisdom leads to any of them. But I want to talk about energy and effort, or in the language of the Buddha in Pali, virya. Supporting the flow with energy and effort. So many, many metaphors we could use for this, for flow. If you think about a stream or a river and all the different things that are happening in a river, in a stream, and you're going down the stream in a boat or in something, how are you going to navigate this? What kind of effort are you going to bring to it? What kind of energy is required? So if you think about the parami of energy, oftentimes it is talked about in terms of literal virya, the literal oomph. What does it take? You know, the energy that it takes to be present. But we can also connect it to wise effort. And wise effort, this path factor, which you know, which is knowing the difference between wholesome and unwholesome mind states, and what to do or not do about them, right? And isn't this an important piece, that when whatever the mind state is that is present, skillful, unskillful, painful, pleasant, wholesome, unwholesome, how to respond is the key in our practice. And we know this. This is what it is. But back to Mary's point, how to respond is the key. Well, how do I know how to respond? The how of all of this. And sometimes we need patience. We need to let it just settle. We need to not do. We need to have the wisdom to see clearly. Do you remember the story of the monk? You might remember this. He's going for a walk in the forest, and he gets this sense in the forest. It's this beautiful environment. There's a big forest on his right, and off to the left is this big river, and the river is down a cliff, and he's enjoying this cliffside walk, and he gets the feeling that he's being followed. And he keeps looking back. Am I being followed? Am I being followed? There's some sort of presence there. When he sees there actually is a tiger that is following him, that's hiding behind the trees as he walks. And it's a little scary, because who wants to be followed by a tiger? So he walks a little faster and a little faster, and the tiger is quiet, but he's there and he's keeping pace with the monk. And finally, the monk is walking fast enough, and he decides he's got to get out of there. And he just sees this big, huge vine growing at the base of a tree. And he holds onto this vine, and he decides he's going to take the vine and climb down, hold onto it, and go down to the river, because he doesn't think that the tiger is going to jump off the cliff after him. So he's holding this vine, and he lets himself go back. And you know, these vines, what happens is they get thinner and thinner and thinner the longer they go, and he gets pretty far down, and it's a pretty thin vine, and the tiger is looking down at him, and this he's feeling a little threatened, a lot threatened. And as he's getting a little scared, and you know, when you get scared, sometimes you can get a little paralyzed, like, oh my God, I can't even move. And he's not moving. And he sees at that moment a couple of mice coming out, and they start gnawing on the vine. And he says, oh my God, what am I going to do now? Here's the tiger, here's the river, here's the mice gnawing on the vine, and he sees growing right out of the crack of the wall are a couple of little wild strawberries. And so he says, well, I'm going to eat the strawberries. And that's the end of the story. So sometimes we need to not do. Sometimes all we can do is right there. We could probably make up a lot of different endings to that. It's kind of fun to think about, well, wait a minute, didn't he get all the way down? Was he okay? The tiger really didn't eat him, because we really do want happily ever after. Knowing wholesome and unwholesome, knowing what is necessary and what is unnecessary. And so we bring a certain amount of energy to our presence, energy to our practice, to our lives. And I think that this brings us to what Virya is pointing to is an indefatigability, that we're so committed to this practice that even when it wanes, we have some capacity to come back, to understand what is it like when it wanes. And not to be critical, but just say, okay, you know, it's fallen off a little bit. My energy is low. And so we do what we need to come back. And coming to Sangha is a way to rebuild the energy, reconnect. This commitment towards practice and developing a peaceful mind that's supported by strength and courage, by wise effort. And if you notice, I don't know if you noticed in the meditation, I gave that instruction to hold enough energy in the back body to hold your attentiveness, but let everything else soften, so there can be some receptivity. That kind of energy shores up mindfulness, because you're holding that energy in the back body, and this is how meditation can be the training ground, at the same time softening the front, letting things move. Does this make sense to you? It's an important instruction around attentiveness and relaxation at the same time. Here's what Sylvia Boorstein says about this parami of energy. She says, I feel an invigorating consolidation of my energy, striving to be here now. Each time I realize that now is the only time anything happens, and that every now disappearing just as rapidly as it arrives has been shaped and created by a habit, and in its fleeting existence is shaping and creating other habits. I know that my experience of a peaceful, happy mind depends on developing the habits that support it. Since habits are, by definition, deeply ingrained patterns, and all moments are immediately lost, I need to enlist every moment to teach me about suffering and the end of suffering. Knowing that I haven't a moment to lose keeps my energy level high. We really don't have a moment to lose. This keeps our energy level high, but we're not talking about hypervigilance here. So, you know, the story about the tiger is a little extreme, but it kept that monk paying attention. To keep one's energy level high, I haven't a moment to lose, means I really want to be present for my life. I don't want to miss it. And truth be told, I really like doing the New York Times spelling bee. Anybody else like doing that? And the thing is, it is kind of a waste of time. And sometimes I think, oh my God, if I were to add up every month how much time I've spent on that spelling bee, what am I doing? But I have to tell you, I really like it. And I, you know, it's fine to have fun. It's fine to play a game. But I do think about this, think about don't miss your life. Well, what about when I want to zone out? It's being human. I want to do that. So, you know, let's be realistic also and not hold any of this too tightly and take the time to go play a game. You know, it's fine to go do that. All right, so I'm just thinking about time here. The other thing that happens that's very, very real that you may have heard is when we really engage in this parami of energy and commit to a practice of wise effort, and we start to really get that thing about now is the only now I have. I can't do today over again. I want to be present. What comes about is what's known as spiritual urgency. Are you familiar with that phrase? Spiritual urgency. Yeah, it's beautiful. You know, the instruction sometimes is, can you practice as if your hair is on fire? Well, I don't want my hair to be on fire. And I don't want to practice with that kind of intensity. But I don't want to miss my life. That is really true. I don't want to miss my life. And spiritual urgency is often offered as a way to think about, you know, in Zen practice, there's this beautiful instruction that says, awaken, awaken. Life and death are of supreme importance. Don't miss your life. That's not exact, but that's pretty close. And so then what that does is it brings us into a practice of the five daily reflections, which I want to bring into us tonight. I love this practice. Mary's nodding. Some of you know the five daily reflections. I think it is a very poignant, beautiful practice that can keep us awake to this piece of wisdom tells me I'm nothing. Love tells me I am everything. Everything is going to change. I better love. And I think that's what these reflections are giving us. So let's talk about it. The first, I am of the nature to age. I have not gone beyond aging. Right? We're not exempt, of course. Nothing stays the same. Our lives, especially our bodies, are changing. How do we see aging in ourselves? How do we see it in each other? What is the cultural conditioning we all, I mean, you know the answer to this. The cultural conditioning around aging is to buy as many little beautiful little jars of eye cream in fancy packages as possible, and they don't do anything. I mean, maybe they do. But what are the messages that we get around aging? What is our own relationship to this? And this is for each one of us to practice with. But this is just the truth. This is nothing earth-shattering. We are all aging. So can we love that about ourselves? Can we love the wisdom that grows with age and not only look at the physical manifestations of our aging, but see how wise we become as we age? I think that is pretty common. I am subject to illness. I have not gone beyond illness. And as obvious as this is, we get sick and we resist it because being ill is typically uncomfortable. And being in this animal human body, we are constantly acclimating and adapting and trying to come back to some homeostasis. And when illness arises, we have this phrase that says, what's wrong? And I get it that it is semantics. What's wrong? Nothing is fundamentally wrong. What if we can shift that languaging to, oh, the body is telling me to pay attention. There's something going on here that needs me, that is important to attend to, but it isn't wrong. And if we can get this languaging out of our minds and hearts around right and wrong, so much else is possible. It is the way of things. This is the Dharma. We go through cycles of illness and wellness as living in an alive body. So I think over and over again, our practice asks us to notice the places where we are in contention with our lives. Are we fighting it? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, it's a bummer to get a bad cold. It's a bummer to get COVID. It's, you know, it is unfortunate. It is uncomfortable, but it is not wrong. And we are each subject to this. I am subject to death. I've not gone beyond death. What is our own relationship, each one of us, with death? We all have a different relationship to it, and we live in a culture that is not very fluent, right? You know, we have so much fear of it, and I get that. I totally understand this. And it's said that so much of spiritual practice is a reckoning with our own mortality, our own and others. Can we prepare and see the naturalness of our own death? Maybe yes, maybe no, maybe intellectually. But then as the body breaks down, it can be really frightening. So the answer to that is to love more, is to see this preciousness. And this fourth one, I am subject to loss. I will be separated from everything I hold dear. I think that this is the most difficult one. We understand aging, we understand illness, we understand death is going to happen, but when we lose people, relationships, anything, a house, a job, anything that is part of our stability, how we identify in our lives, the things that shore us up, it hurts. Dukkha is true. Dukkha is a fact of life. So we're not exempt. You know, I think about all, you know, I imagine, I am guessing that every single one of us here tonight has experienced some sort of profound and painful loss. So it's common and it's a common denominator. And so we don't have to know, pardon me, each other's stories to know that each one of us has despaired, to know that each one of us has experienced real pain from loss. And in this way, we connect. We know each other. We understand. And can we let ourselves be understood? And can we say, I know this is painful? Because it is. That's the truth of it. A couple of stories. This is not a story. This is just a little teaching from Terry Tempest Williams, who said, the mirage we see dancing on the horizon is more than the tease of water. It's the illusion that what you want, you will have. Because we struggle a lot to get what we want, and we struggle to get not to get what we don't want. And when we get what we want, the bummer is, and the struggle is it's going to go away. It's so temporary. So we got to love what's here. There's a great story, I may have told you this before, about Yitzhak Perlman, the great violinist. You know, he had polio when he was young, and through his whole performing life, he would come on stage on crutches and now an electric scooter, and somebody else would bring his violin. And the story goes that one night he was playing a Bach violin concerto, and in the middle of the concert, one of his violin strings broke. And he barely took a breath, and he continued to play on three strings. And after the concert, somebody was interviewing him about it and said, how did you do that? And he said, the artist's task is to find out how much music we still can make with what we've got left. The artist's task is to find out how much music we still can make with what we've got left. I remember Colin Powell, before he died, he was interviewed, and he was dying, and he knew he had cancer. And the person who was interviewing him said, you know, how are you doing? And he said, I'm fine. I've got multiple myeloma cancer. I've got Parkinson's disease. I'm 84 years old, and I am perfectly fine. I've had a really good life. Don't feel sorry for me. I hope I do that. The ability to say, yes, I have all of these things, and I'm okay. I think that's what these daily reflections help us meet and help us see. The last is, I am the owner of my karma, heir to actions, born of actions, related through actions. What I do for good or for evil, to that I fall heir. That's the traditional phraseology of this. I've not gone beyond this. No small potatoes. That's what this means. Ruth Denison famously said, karma means you don't get away with nothing. And this is not all bad, right? You know, again, what we do matters. How we show up in the world matters. Know that you are important. You are of value. I am of value. What we bring to each other has an effect. It matters. And then I added a sixth one to the five daily reflections. And I don't think actually I'm the originator of this, but I am of the nature to be born. Pause and think about that. I mean, just the fact that each one of us is here, our parents got together and their parents and their parents and their parents, and what's the likelihood of that? But that's not actually what I'm talking about. What I am talking about is that we can keep learning and growing and staying curious our entire life. What if every day we woke up and said, I wonder about, that ability to wonder, to stay curious, never has to leave us. And we know from brain science, from research, that the brain can continue to grow and change. It isn't a done deal. So that's pretty exciting. We can be born into this moment over and over and over again and continue to learn something new, even if we can't walk. You know, despite the physical limitations that many of us already have or will have, you can still, hopefully you can still think and do the crossword puzzle or the spelling bee. All right, so I'm going to end with a blessing from Jack Kornfield. He says, you have been given the energy of the stars. this life force, and you have the capacity to do all kinds of things with it. May you use this energy to plant beautiful seeds, to work for justice, to care for others and this earth, and to do it in your own special way. May you use your meditation and your spiritual practices as a way to cultivate and open your heart and your being to this possibility. Thank you, everybody. We have a little bit of time to talk with each other. Anybody have any questions, comments, additions, reflections? Go ahead and unmute. Marion, hi.
Hi. Through your talk, I'm going, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And I decided, yes, I'm going to say this. And I have, I've had this illness for 20-something years, and I've never read something like this to anybody, except I think my dentist, so he would understand how to deal with me. It's just a few sentences. And then I want to, know how, I don't know what I want to know. I feel I've gotten a lot of wisdom, tremendous wisdom. It's not enough. Yeah, maybe. Okay. Here goes. Complex regional pain syndrome is a neuroinflammatory condition causing the nervous and immune system to malfunction, sending constant pain signals to the brain. It's characterized by severe burning pain, changes in bones, skin, hair, and teeth, excessive sweating, tissue swelling, and extreme sensitivity to touch. The McGill pain scale rated it higher than childbirth, amputation, and cancer pain. And then you're talking about colds, you know, and I get furious. And then I switch and I become like wise and Buddhist. And I hear everything you say, and it goes in, and yes, yes, and I have so much patience. Nobody's got more patience, I think. And then I'm having this kind of pain for, it's actually probably 40 years.
Wow.
Never stopping. Doesn't get better and worse and better and worse. Just gets worse. I don't know what to, I don't know how to be anymore.
Oh, Marion. I'm
on everybody's, everybody's normal.
Yeah.
Compared to me. It's only like this the last few years. Before that, I had energy no matter what I did.
I'm so sorry that you have this kind of pain. I wish it were different for you. And I can see why you might have been thinking, oh, she's talking about a cold. She's got no idea what I'm living in. And so I want to acknowledge that to you, that this is a big deal.
All right. Well, I don't want to hear anymore about people I'm close to are sorry. I want to know what to do. Sometimes I do, but mostly I don't.
Maybe we could just all pause and beam metta to Marion. This is very difficult. And if I said anything, Marian, that felt in any way dismissive or offensive in any way, I'm sorry for that as we talk about this.
Well, nobody can understand. It's just the way I can't understand other terrible stuff.
Thank you for sharing this with us.
Oh, thank you, boy. It's the only place, like I said, in the world that
Who else? Viv.
Hi. I want to say that I, at some level, I do understand. And what's going on with me? I pause because I'm thinking, I'm about to say what's wrong with me. But maybe what we're talking about is just, this is how it is.
Yes, 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 yes.
So I just want to say, I don't like it when people say they're sorry, because I think it shows to me, it shows a lack of understanding, because it's not about your feeling and the fact that you are feeling. To me, that's not a, I know it's meant from a compassion place. Oh boy, am I going to be sorry after I said all of this? I know it's from a compassion place, but at the same time, it's like, oh, you're sorry that I've been living like this, you know, for 40 years.
And, yeah. Yeah.
And no offense meant, I'm just, you know, wisdom. One of the ways that I've heard wisdom described is wisdom is experience understood. I think it's Aya Santa Chita who has said that many times. So I'm just giving you my understanding of my experience when I hear it. And it's yes, no. I can appreciate somebody saying that. I know it's coming from a loving place and a concerned place and a compassionate place. But right now, I'm just talking about what it does for me, kind of on the heels of what Marian was saying. And when you said the thing about the cold, this isn't personal, Heidi. It's just, it's like,
look.
The thing about the cold. Is like,
yeah, no, I get that. Okay. I'm going to pause us here.
Yeah. Stop.
I'm just going to pause us completely here and say what I am hoping to be able to share here is an orientation towards dukkha, the truth of dukkha, recognizing that it is different for everyone. And when I said that I believed that all of us have had profound experiences of losses, and we don't have to know each other's stories to understand that loss is a common denominator, that is the important piece here around compassion being cultivated, understanding the preciousness of life. And when I or anybody else uses a phrase that pisses you off, it isn't personal. It's meant to say, I see you, I hear you, I wish things were other for you. And I'm willing to get it wrong in my expressions of heartfulness, of showing up. But I would much rather express compassion and care and get my language a little bit wrong than not express it. So I'm willing to screw it up and have you say, I don't like that phrase. Somebody else might say, I really love it when somebody says that. So in my role that I'm occupying in this moment tonight, I know I'm going to screw it up sometimes. But what I hope you get is that I really care. And I know each one of you really cares, because you wouldn't be here if you didn't. That's what we're doing here. That is what we are doing here. So when I use the example of a cold, I am very aware of how minor that is. Very. But it's also universal. And so I can't necessarily name the extremes. I mean, I could name the extremes. But what I'm hoping you hear is that the experience of impermanence is so true. And the skillful response to the nature of our lives of being, we are hanging on a vine, right? We are hanging on a vine. Can we train in caring? Can we train in caring about this? Zoe.
So one of the things that came to mind is the question that came up for me about wisdom and where to place my energy in relation to when I'm observing so much suffering, say, for instance, earlier, because I'm on a different time zone, I watched 60 Minutes and it was a heart-wrenching program about what's happening in Gaza, mm-hmm. extreme mm-hmm. suffering and lots of people starving to death right now. I was so overwhelmed with that story that it makes me wonder where the wisdom is of even bearing witness sometimes. If you get to the point where you are so, you don't know how to relieve that experience, even though you're not the one actually suffering, there's a secondary suffering of just observing that this is happening, and sometimes it's overwhelming. And so I wonder where wisdom plays a part when you are placing your energy in a direction where you're having to be aware of the incredible suffering that's going on in the world right now, and you feel powerless to really do anything except to be aware of it. I don't know if I'm expressing that
very clearly. Well, as I would like. Very clearly. I totally, I'm with you. So, you know, given what is happening, let's just name it, in Gaza, one might think, what is the use of what we're doing? When that kind of suffering, that kind of barbarity can be going on. And we have the privilege of being able to be wherever we each are, in our own homes, wherever we are. And likely the bombs aren't falling right where we are, and we're not starving to death. What incredible privilege that is. I am not in a position to have any answer about this, because I think that because it is overwhelming, let's just say that, right? Because it is, Zoe. It is so unimaginably horrible.
That's the word that came up for me. It's unimaginable. I just don't know how to phrase it or what to think about it.
So this is what we need. So here's something that I will bring to you. And I know we're over time. So I want to say this. Yuval Harari is a brilliant Israeli writer, philosopher, thinker. And after October 7th happened, he wrote a book called Sapiens. And after October 7th happened, he was quoted in Time magazine. There was a piece that he wrote about what can we do who are external to this horror that is going on? And he was talking about how the trauma, because this isn't obviously, I mean, it's gotten so much worse, this ongoing open wound trauma that is happening to Palestinians and to Israelis, that they are in such states of overwhelm that they cannot have compassion or empathy for one another, for what each other is going through, because the trauma is too bad. obviously. And so his request was, we need all of you around the world to be holding us, to be holding us with this kind of compassion and empathy, be willing to know what is happening. So when this is over, you will have been holding a bigger space for us that we can then tap into. It's not an exact quote, but I felt like it gave me something to do. I felt like that recognition that the millions of people who are involved in the direct conflict of this are hurting so terribly, and this trauma is going to go on for the rest of their lives, probably, right? I mean, this is horrid. But what we can do, because we have the great good fortune of being outside of this, is we can understand that what we do matters, that we train in the heart so that so we don't make a bad thing worse, so we don't create conflict that doesn't need to be there, so that we are committed to practices of non-harming. And also to your point, Zoe, how do we bear witness to this? Is it going to destroy our own hearts bearing witness to this? I don't know the answer, but I'm just sharing with you some of my thoughts and what I'm thinking about and what I'm reading about. And it's overwhelming. And none of us can fix this. This is so much bigger than all of us put together, I think. But I am not an expert. I don't have the answers. You know, I'm here guiding some meditation, talking about the Dharma. Really, you know, that's all I'm doing. And being here with you and you with me.
So the skillful may be in just holding a space of compassion.
That's right. That's right. And and also noticing when, I think for each of us, when the outrage arises, the anger might arise, to not act out of anger, to really not, and not shoot the second or third or fourth or fifth arrow, to really not do that. So earlier when I said the wisdom, that wise effort says knowing wholesome and unwholesome, skillful and unskillful mind states, and knowing what to do or not to do is key. To pause, to wait, to connect with intention, to not cause more harm than's already there. I don't know. You know, those are my thoughts on it, Zoe. And
maybe part of the wisdom is to know when to disengage, when it's too
much.
That's right. And you need to take a break from it. A new
that's why I do. That's why I do the spelling bee.
Yeah.
Seriously, you know, go read a novel, go for a walk, be outside, see what's beautiful. It's very important to notice beauty. Very important to connect with what's good.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. Deborah, before I come to you, I am going to ask, is it okay if we take one more question? I know we're 6 minutes over before we go to Vita and the Metta. Can we bring Deborah in? Okay, great. Come on in, Deborah.
I'll try not to be long-winded. I'm packing my bags. I don't know how long it gets to drive up to where you are, but I'll be there by morning.
Okay, fine.
And this talk couldn't have been more perfect. And I thank you for it, as always.
Thank you.
I'll sleep on the couch. You don't have to. And I do understand what Marion was saying. Mm-hmm. I'm not in her situation, but this body that I'm living in, thankfully and gratefully, hasn't had peace or absence of pain for 32 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm currently wearing a heart monitor now. This is the newest and the latest. So I got it. And the thing about the cold, I just, you know, translated it.
Thank you.
I know that you know COVID, cancer, an oophorectomy, a neuroma on the vagus nerve, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. None of it is a walk in the park.
Right.
And I'm just grateful I still have a sense of humor.
You know, it's really, actually, this is not a small thing. I remember when Larry Yang once said, "This is so serious, let's hold it lightly." You know, that was a very helpful teaching to me. This is all so seriously, serious, let's hold it lightly. And here's the thing. I'm glad you understood my comment about a cold. We are not comparing traumas here. We are not comparing. Let's not do that. Let's understand dukkha hurts. Hard things are hard, whatever they are. So we level the playing field knowing that everybody is suffering. Some people have it harder than others. Let's be truthful about that too. That's just true.
I just love what you said about every day. You know, as much as I grumble about it, you know, well, you know, I don't have my own house, or I don't have a this, I don't have that. I have to stop and give gratitude for having an apartment that I live in a fabulous mm-hmm. neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And there are almost always organic blueberries on my counter in my refrigerator.
Okay, and there you go.
This is where I have to go to take refuge. And it's not always easy.
So that's perspective. Yeah. Thank you.